Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guests are Christy and Leo Zagami. Before I bring them on, just a couple of announcements. As you can see, if you're watching the video, I'm currently on a little road trip for a couple of weeks, but I will still be doing as many shows as possible on the go while traveling. You can always get new episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. Click the link in the description and check us out on Rockfin. This is where you get our premium content. Also, check out all the awesome podcasts that we feature on the Forbidden Knowledge Network. Get those on our website, forbiddenknowledge.news. Also, follow us on Facebook. Those links are all in the description. And finally, check out C60 Purple Power, maybe the most powerful antioxidant known to man. I have personally experienced so many amazing benefits, but check it out for yourself. If you click the link in the description, you can get 10% off your order plus free shipping. Tonight, I want to welcome Christy and Leo Zagami. Christy and Leo married in 2014 when she began her own publishing company where she edits and published Leo's Confession series 4, 5, 6.66, and soon volume 7, and all of Leo's works in Italian. She has written two books that tell her story of living with Leo in Italy. In the end, they had to flee Italy, leaving everything they owned behind to start a new life in May of 2019. Confessions of an Illuminati Princess 1 and 2 gave her perspective on her harrowing journey since meeting Leo. Leo walked out from what he perceived as the criminal side of the New World Order or Illuminati, and now exposes the dark side of these shadowy factions. He is the author of several books and makes several appearances on InfoWars. They will never stop standing up for their beliefs and will continue their brave mission in awakening as many people as they can in this crucial moment for humanity. Christy and Leo, welcome. How are you?
Hi.
Hello there. Here from a very unusual setup that we have decided to dedicate to our first appearance together, me and Christy, for your show.
Oh, that's great, man. I feel honored. It's great to have you both on. Leo, it's great to have you back. It's always great talking with you. And I'm looking forward to tonight because tonight we have your beautiful wife, Christy, here with us. She's here to tell us a bit of her story and talk about her books and give us insights into her experiences and really this true nature of the hidden reality that we're all participating in, whether we know it or not. But Leo, you're here to give support and add anything to these experiences that you'd like. But Christy, this is your first time on. I'd love for you to tell the audience about how did you and Leo get together?
Oh, well, we met in 2008 and we met on MySpace. He was a friend with one of my friends. We had a mutual friend together and he saw me on her profile. And so he contacted me. And I had never heard of him before. He had just started his exposure work in 2006. So he was on the internet talking a lot about what his experiences and what he was going through. And he tried to explain it to me in the message that he sent me. And it was like Illuminati. And I've only read like the Da Vinci Code. So I had never heard of anything of what he was talking about. And so he really opened my eyes to a lot of things. That's how we met. I mean, we met on MySpace and mm-hmm. we talked for a little bit, but we really didn't connect until 2009. In January of 2009, New Year's Eve is when we really started to talk to each other. So
now when you first started to find out about what he had been involved with, were you kind of apprehensive about getting involved with this or scared in any way?
I like the Illuminati part, but I was a really a diehard Republican, and he was saying a lot of stuff about President Bush and 9/11 that I didn't understand. And so, you know, it was just like, I was like, what are you talking about? And he tried to explain it to me. Well, now I get it. But at the time, it was very hard. He opened my eyes to everything, really, that I didn't understand, really, that was going on with 9/11. And it was mostly that we talked about.
Right.
Well, I mean, she initially thought that was some kind of terrorist.
I said, the first time I talked to him, I said, I don't associate with terrorists, and I hung up.
Well, oh, no.
Of course, we know who George W. Bush is and who was his father. So, I mean, I think that without Donald J. Trump, the Republican Party will have never really changed its DNA and really give a real hope to America. So I'm glad that I was there to support him right from the presidential run in 2015, and one of the first organizations in the world created outside of America dedicated to his presidency, first as a candidate and then, of course, as a president. And so I'm very proud of what we accomplished, though it didn't really help me out much in Italy, because I was already persecuted, and I guess it kind of like got me even more persecuted. What Christy realized as soon as she arrived in Rome, and it was April of 2009, it was basically that it wasn't just a narrative for some kind of show I was putting up. It was a reality that she lived right from the start, because the day she arrived, I think it was around the end of April. Which was the exact day?
23rd.
23rd is also a magical number.
Yeah.
We ended up visiting that day the headquarters of the Academy of the Illuminati, because I was actually giving an interview in relation to the release of the movie Angel and Demons. And the vice president of the Academy, who is now one of the protagonists with the Rothschild family of the Council for whatever, Inclusive Capitalism of the Body, or something like that it's called. But Evelyn de Rothschild, I mean, the whole situation of the Rothschilds was basically, for me, antithetic with what I was doing, but at the same time they wanted me to give my honest opinion about the subject that was treated in Angel and Demons. So they called me there, and we were still kind in a way, we still had an ongoing dialogue with certain forces. They tried to convince me, because I had just moved back to Italy the year prior to Christy arriving, you know. So, I mean, I was very fresh, and I had just moved back from Norway, where I lived for many years. And before that, I was living in London. So I hadn't been living in Italy for 15 years. And the Academy of the Illuminati thought for a moment that they could offer me some TV job or something to just shut me up and actually get me maybe involved with the show without really being involved with the real things that are at work. And of course, after a couple, actually after 3-4 years, when I came out with my books also in Italy, they understood, of course, that I wasn't somebody who was shutting up. But it was thanks to Christy that I ended up
I only stayed for about 5 days on that trip. And then I went back to America because we're American and I lived there. I was married at the time, exiting my marriage, and I have 2 kids that are, well, at the time one was 18 and he was joining the Marine Corps, and my other child was 16, and so it was really hard for me. But once I met Leo, you know, I just we fell in love. And so it was really hard to be apart. And so after I went home, I wanted to be with him again. And so I had this job coming up because I was a model. And so I invited him to come along with me. And so we went to Tokyo together. And that's where he started his first book with Benjamin Fulford.
Yeah, it was like the first book project I ever put together. And actually, I have to thank Fulford, even if later on he demonstrated to be a little bit of an out of order kind of character, yeah. Completely freaky, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Because his relationship with truth is not always there. And you know, he was a journalist like me. I had, of course, been working for many years on the side doing some journalist work. And when I met through the internet Benjamin Fulford, and actually through a common friend who introduced me to him, Daniele Dal Bosco, who was my economic advisor at the time, and another member of the Monte Carlo Lodge, he told me there is this guy who is representative, basically he's representing Chinese Freemasonry. And that is true. He represents the Hongmen, which is this big Masonic fraternity from China, not a in the sense of speculative Freemasonry as we intended here in the West. Mm-hmm. It's a completely different kind of Freemasonry. I described it very much in volume two of my confession, what this kind of Freemasonry is all about. And very rarely they initiate Western people. So my interest was also to ask him questions about how this form of Freemasonry worked, the initiations, what they were expecting from the candidates, and his new mission in wanting to fight, because he was basically saying that these Chinese Freemasons were challenging the West. In reality, on the long run, I understood that it was all a show and the Chinese just wanted to jump into the extravagant world of conspiracy theories, and they wanted to do it with a big mouth like Benjamin Fulford, who had been formerly the bureau chief for Forbes in Asia. And of course, when I went to Tokyo, I also was introduced to Princess Kaoru Nakamaru. I was with the Christie, we visited a couple of times, maybe the club for the journalists, for the foreign journalists. There's always a foreign journalist club in every city. Mm-hmm. And so we went there. And it was a very constructive meeting, and a couple of books, a few books actually were born out of meeting Princess Kaoru, and then later on bringing her often to Italy for various meetings, both with Freemasonry, then the Vatican. You see, in the first couple of years, I went back to Italy, and I was just fresh from starting my confessions online in 2006. Mm-hmm. There had been, first of all, some meetings in 2008, in the summer of 2008. But then later on, the problem was that I had been arrested for espionage and had to flee Norway quickly because I had an accusation of espionage, and then they confiscated everything. So when I actually met my new wife here, Christy, I was fresh from a very bad experience, being betrayed for my former wife. The possibility of seeing my child became for them a weapon to use to silence me up, because I went to Norway to actually see if I could have some kind of visitations granted to me. And instead, they arrested me for espionage. And so I was really very much shocked by what happened to me in Norway, because
it was fresh when I met you.
Yes,
so really fresh.
I mean, it was fresh, and I was actually waking up almost every night with nightmares because they arrested me two times. First on the day before my birthday, and then later on when I went back for this possibility of maybe seeing my son. And at that point, I actually had even my mother with me, and my now, unfortunately, defunct friend, Hans Gardner, who Christy met, a very nice guy, a journalist from Norway, who died in very mysterious circumstances this year, who was fighting the COVID mafia there in Norway. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly he ended up dying, but without really being sick or anything. So there is a lot of talk. They, of course, said it was COVID. They went all over the national media to try to make fun of his stand as a negationist and all that. But that, of course, at the time, instead, Hans was coming often to Italy to visit us because his daughter works for the Norwegian embassy, and He was often coming to also to visit me in Italy. But when he was in Norway, he actually witnessed the arrest, which was rather brutal. And it was done while I was just going towards the courtroom. So the doors of the lift opened up and the police arrived and they dragged me in front of my mother. He started, I had to basically say to my mother to be tranquil and just, and also to answer, because he started to say, fascist, fascist. But I said, come, guys, I was going to get arrested, even my mother. So I was like, they were making a big scene out of it. I knew that I would somehow get out of it. And in fact, fortunately, the Italian embassy sent me somebody from the embassy to assist me, and eventually I had to flee the country. The day after, I was suggested to just leave the country and never return, and that's what I did. But the moment in which I met Christy, I didn't have anything. I was actually living with $100 a week given by my parents, and it was very humiliating for somebody who is 38, been around the world working and having a great successful history in the music business, to suddenly not have anything and also not having any longer the possibility of seeing my son. So definitely the way we met was, I think, good result of some angelic forces at work, if I have to be really honest with you.
Now, yeah, that's quite a story. And Christy, I'm sure you didn't have any lack of material for your books, Confessions of an Illuminati Princess, Volume 1 and 2. I'd love to hear kind of what brought you to write your books and what were some of the most profound influences that you really wrote about?
Okay, well, I wrote my first book, the volume one, in 2016, 2017, I published it. And I had so many experiences, and I felt like I needed to document them because they were so crazy. The things that happened to us, they were so unbelievable, and I didn't want to forget them. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote them down, and they ended up, after I got it all together, it was a book. So
I think that.
Also, because I wanted to publish his books and I needed a book to publish. And so I just decided to publish like this memoir. Experience. Yeah. Just to see, like, to learn how to publish a book. And so that's really why I published my book to begin with. Because it was
The testimony that Christy gives in her books. And I would like to show them here. This is volume one. This is volume two. Because a lot of people initially gave me really a hard time about me being involved with the New World Order, the Illuminati. Is he a Freemason? Is he not? This and that and all the other. And when I met Christy, this debate was still ongoing. Yeah. So people were calling me a charlatan, this and that. And even Christy at the beginning thought that I was actually around to maybe
grab the very beginning.
At the very beginning, she thought I was there to grab a buck doing some scam kind
I
of
did, thing. But that was just like, that was like in the very, very beginning. When I actually met in
my financial advisor, Daniela Bosco, had this idea of saying, let's see if we can get people who are aligned with our way of thinking to maybe invest some money in a project, but it wasn't in any way because we wanted to scam people. I didn't have any books or anything to sell. Let's remind all the people who are here now following us. Now I have a bunch of books in every language possible and imaginable being printed in the last 12 years. But at that time, from 2006, the moment in which I started my exposure work, to the moment I met Christy and I went to Japan, I was simply trying to survive and give a testimony of what I was doing to avoid being killed. I mean, it was that serious. So I think that it's really good that Christy was there, and also that she can be a testimony for all the things that, I mean, people think, he's not a Freemason. Well, I even managed to get Christian to get initiated in London in the center of worldwide Freemasonry.
That's one of the things I write about, is my whole experience with Freemasonry.
It wasn't all incredibly positive, but it was an experience.
Yeah, it was an experience.
Right. Now, people have different understandings of Freemasonry. A lot of people are afraid of it. Some people think it's satanic. There's a lot of just misinformation that goes on about what Freemasonry is all about. For you, I know they have different factions and different sects of Freemasonry. What is the main ideals for the faction of Freemasonry that you're involved with? I mean, it has nothing to do with Satanism, right?
Oh, well, no.
That's what everybody likes to say, though. Over and over, and they still say it. It's really annoying.
That was really annoying. That was really annoying also with Benjamin Fulford, who wanted to portray me as kind of a new Anton LaVey.
Oh, my God, that guy. He wanted to conjure up a demon in the living room.
He was really... He came from Japan to Rome, and I, of course,
he's
managed...
like, hey, Leo, let's conjure up a demon.
And I was bringing him around. I was getting him in the Vatican. I was getting him to talk with various important members of different Masonic bodies and stuff. I must say that in 2021, I am pretty much sure that at this point, Freemasonry has failed.
Yeah.
I said this at the beginning of the pandemic. I said it to the brethren. I said, let's see what you're made up of. If you are going to go along with this theater and with all this whole thing, and you are not going to really help the brothers in need, well, at that point, I'm out. And the confirmation for all this came with the death of a very dear friend of mine, Christy also knew him, who was an actor and a guy who used to be a member of a lodge here in the area. And basically what happened was that he died on the 4th of July, of 2020, and nobody from his lodge even bothered to contact me to say he died. And at the same time, I know that he probably died of COVID. And he was old, of course, and he didn't want to stop what he was doing. He was going around, like, to help people. You know, he was one of those Shriners who wears the clown things and goes to the children hospitals. He was a very nice guy. But the thing is that in general, from that moment onwards, when they started to do all the meetings on Zoom, when they started to push this narrative that after to go back into the lodge, you needed to be vaccinated, well, at that point, I said, you can screw yourself. I mean, I was trying to save Freemasonry. But I tell you the truth, the moment in which I left Italy, and Christy knows this very well, I also formally closed down all my Masonic activities. I did, it was the middle of May, you remember, I did that ritual in a church near Rome to close down all my Masonic activities, because I was a grandmaster in charge still of a few lodges when I left Italy. And I was in charge of a rite, which I was trying to revive, a Christian rite, because I was trying to push people within Freemasonry to choose Christianity over occultism and New Age BS. And so I think that in the end, unfortunately, I failed. I was not capable of... I tried very hard. And it wasn't easy because of the fact that I always was participant with the Masonic fraternity of some activities. I always got regularly accused of being this and that. You can't trust this guy, he's a Freemason. Oh, you can't... No, I tried my best to really bring Freemasons back to Christ, and I did it by reviving a rite that they actually had dismantled and tried to bury, which was the rite of the strict Templar observance. So I tried my best, and now I can say that we have, unfortunately, a institution that is completely corrupt, just like the Vatican, And just like the rest of the world institutions that in this day and age are just going for the great reset. So that's it. I mean, of course, history will remember my attempt. It was in a way good to show to the Italian authorities and all the people who were spying on me, the Vatican, the other Masonic bodies and all that, that when I did my lodges, things actually manifested and it was a very serious thing. First of all, I decided to bring back the Masonic tradition into the churches. And actually I used churches to do the Masonic tournaments, the Masonic gatherings. And that is something that not many Masons have had the experience of even doing because it's very rare. But I was lucky enough, God helped me out. I had a beautiful setup in one of the most beautiful towns in the world. Villa d'Este is there, and Villa Gregoriana, and some of the most beautiful places, really, architecturally. It's fantastic. So I had a couple of churches.
I did all the art for his.
Yes, and Christy also did some of the art.
They have like the all-seeing eye.
And all these things. Yes, so Christy really...
Is that right?
Yeah, the Eye of Providence.
The
all-seeing eye and all the rest. So, I mean, in the end, there was an attempt that, and people who in some way went against me and tried to fight all this, they were really fighting a very powerful force there because I mean, I had the image of Saint Michael the Archangel up upon my lodge at the entrance. This was a church that was 800 years old. I mean, I had the bones of the of some of the most powerful aristocrats that were actually buried inside the corners of, inside the church, and so the actual energy was very strong. And the other church I used to use was another historically incredible church because that church was a Jesuit church that was basically this, how you can say, it's basically loses the consecration the moment in which is something happens in it. And actually what happened was that Giuseppe Garibaldi, at the time Grand Master of the Freemasons, slept in that church for a night or a couple of nights when he was reunifying Italy with his little army of 1,000 red, they called the Red Shares. And so I was really in an historical setup full of incredible energies. And I had amongst my guests some very interesting people, some grandmasters who still believed that we could maybe do something to preserve the Christian identity of Freemasonry. And we tried our best. But like I said, maybe in the future it will be remembered and maybe we will be reawakening these forces at the right time, in the right setup.
I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on Leo always, in his books, he talks about, you know, the dark satanic agenda, dark ET agendas, AI takeover, and that there are malevolent forces that, you know, some of these elite individuals have aligned themselves with. Have you witnessed anything along these lines with you since you've been with Leo? Anything paranormal, unexplained, extraterrestrial, something that you didn't think was real before you met Leo?
All of the above.
Oh, okay.
When I went to Rome, I had been there as a tourist, but I'd never lived there. And as soon the town that we lived, it's on. It was built on top of the village. It was built on top of what is it called? The Satan's. What was it called?
Yeah, it was it's a particular group of hills near Rome, which they say has some kind of occult forces working, and where some claim that the original Faust, before the German myth that led to Goethe's Faust, was actually created in this area. So it's an interesting.
The energy was really, really, it was bad. I've always been like very sensitive, and as soon as I got to Rome, I just felt like something on top of me, just pushing me down and making me, trying to make me sad. And it was just really dark and depressing. The village, I mean, there were so many nice things, but then, you know, this energy was always around, and with the energy and then the people attacking him. And, you know, I had my own problems with just leaving America, and, you know, people weren't happy with me leaving, and my kids were fine. They actually supported me. My youngest son, Tony, came to visit me every year. I mean, he grew up in Italy. I was there for how many years? 10?
Eleven years.
I was there, and he pretty much from 16 onward, he grew up his summers and all his vacations in Italy. So
I would say that you were there for 10 years constantly. Yes, 10 years in which Tony really grew up with us, and he also did some homeschooling from Italy.
Yeah, so he enjoyed it. He really enjoyed it.
He was capable of really staying longer than he should have. And I think he enjoyed the fact that he grew up also partly in Italy, because it was an
experience. I mean, he experienced it too. I mean, he could feel it too. So we both felt there were so many things that happened.
The forces there are very heavy. I mean, you had constantly these people with these possessions.
They would throw curses. I felt them at that time. The Catholic tradition
has a background of very much connected with witchcraft in the peasantry, in the lower classes, in the people who are from the countryside. They still practice some forms of...
There's a witch living next to
it. It's a little bit like in South America, where you have, of course, Santeria in Central America, where you have Santeria, you have in Cuba, or you have in South America a lot of animist elements that are mixed up from the African religion into the Catholic. Now, let's say that the Catholic religion itself, though, has pagan mixed up elements, because, I mean, before the Catholic faith came around, there were a bunch of gods that were worshipped in ancient Rome, and some didn't really stop with the worship of these forces. Some people, of course, especially in these villages, they do minor forms of low witchcraft. I mean, it's like taking out the evil spells by putting a photo inside the water and the oil and all
but kinds. But not to mention the Pope was probably throwing curses too.
I mean, then we had, of course, the fact that at one point it became evident when my books came out that I was going against the Vatican. Up until then, we were kind of not only tolerated, but we were actually invited amongst all the various big shots of the P2, the Illuminati. We were like, they still thought that I was just like, I will give up on denouncing them. I mean, she was participant with me. I brought Princess Caoro. We did a big dinner with Marquis Caldirola. There was all kinds of people in that dinner. I mean, we organized for Princess Caoru the visit official to be received officially, not just like this, by the Vatican and with an official reception. I mean, that was a big thing. And so, and then there was a big mass that was celebrating with this grandmaster of the Knights Templars died. And they wanted me to take his place under the supervision of the Vatican.
And all that stuff with what's his name?
That was Montoro. He offered the whole money. I mean, if I...
They gave me a lot of nice presents, that's for sure.
Yeah, and they were basically... my first book in Italian came out in February, March 2012, no?
Yeah.
And before, basically up to a few weeks before, they were bribing me, asking me not to publish these books.
Yeah.
They literally did that. They brought me to Marinelli, who used to be called the general by John Paul II. He was the head of the Vatican security, one of the heads of the Vatican intelligence. Literally, the Vatican intelligence one day called me on the phone. I was like, yeah, but I mean, when they called Christian, who is it? That's it. It's the Vatican intelligence. I mean, they are inviting me for lunch.
And then Giorgio, he called me on my phone.
Oh, yeah. And then you had the Academy of the Illuminati calling you. But I mean, it was like, this is, it's interesting, I think, for the people to get these books that Christy wrote.
That's all the, all those stories are written.
Volume one. Then volume two is about, instead, all the period when we left, we had to leave Italy, our arrival to the US, all our first experiences here. And of course, all these books include her own experience with Freemason, which she went through the regular initiations. And I brought her to London more than once, so she could study, go through the initiations, apprentice, fellow craft, master mason. And we did it in a mixed lodge so that both men and women can work. But the members who initiated there were actually regular members of the United Grand Lodge of England. So it was like they were actually Masons of the Queen that were, and it was done in a beautiful church in the center of the city of London.
Yeah, that's cool.
It was very Harry Potterish, the whole scenario. And Christy was.
It was interesting.
And I must say that it was, I, of course, was presiding it, and I was invited as I was current Grand Master of our order. I also delivered a speech, and my speech was really harsh against certain things, especially I said, listen, guys, you are, because I saw London really degenerating more and more and falling into the hands of the Islamic fundamentalist. I mean, we arrived in London, and the person downstairs had a big sticker that looked like ISIS. I mean, on the actual door that led into the house. And I used to live there before, it was my aunt's flat, but for a period I lived, and it wasn't like that before. And most of the pubs around had been transformed in halal shops. I mean, it was rather shocking for me to see this, Muslim takeover. So I was very critical, and I said, listen, guys, if you let this continue, you don't do anything to stop it, you are going to be kicked ass in less than 50 years. They're going to come after you. Because the thing you see, Freemasons these days are not really opposing. Actually, some of them, of course, are participants at the very high levels. Most people, your average Masons, are just social Masons. We call them window Masons. They are nice people. The average Mason you get around in the U.S. doesn't know really much. Some people know. And those people simply look the other side because they don't want to have problems. They don't want to have trouble. But let me remind those people that Freemasonry is what helped the building of democracy in the Western society, and not only in the Western society. So if you don't act now against what they're doing, the Club of Rome, World Economic Forum, the Club Bilderberg, and all these people, well, you are basically participating. And what is happening is that they actually are actively participating because they find it... especially for the upper echelons, they find, of course, gratifications of an economic level. Maybe people like Pier Giorgio Bassi who make a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we definitely see, you know, those at the top do it for that. But those at the lowest levels, the regular people, are doing it because they're terrified. They're terrified of the lies they're being told these days. Now, Leo, you and I have been talking about this since before COVID even happened. I remember we did a show early on in 2020 talking about how awful the upcoming 2020 year would be, and it hadn't even really gotten fully fledged started with all the nonsense going on. And we had been talking years before about the New World Order plans. What could they possibly be doing to bring about their, you know, desired dystopian society? And all of a sudden, 2020, we see COVID, we see all this happening. And I want to know, Christy, what did you think when you actually saw all this stuff kind of coming to fruition that Leo had been talking about for years, you know?
I thought we had more time.
Yeah, they're going fast.
I mean, because in volume one of his confessions, he'd written about everything that we're actually going through right now. And when
volume two actually gave the date 2020 for the virus that will lock us down. So
I helped edit those books. And so I had read all of it. But it seemed like science fiction. It seemed like something that was very far away. And, you know, when COVID came, it took me a while to realize that we're in it now. But I was so glad we were out of Italy. I can't even tell you. It was like we got out of there in the nick of time. We left in May of 2019 and COVID hit, you know, the following, February, March.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was so glad we were out of there. So I was just glad I was back in America and missed it. And I just
wanted Italy is the country that now it's one of the most really oppressive. I mean, you have Australia, impressive. You have Austria that now is mandating a compulsory vaccination for the whole population soon. And Italy is soon to follow. I mean, I've been fighting very much politically for years to wake up the Italians. And Christy knows very well what they did to me. The level of persecution that Christy even herself suffered in 2014.
Every time we went out.
When I say the Freemasons are not doing anything while they should be doing something, the Freemasons didn't do anything to stop Nazism, and they ended up being persecuted by Nazism. The Freemasons didn't do anything to stop fascism. Actually, both Nazism and fascism managed to arrive to get Mussolini and Hitler to rise to these positions of power. But then after, when both Mussolini and Hitler were in power, the first thing they did is to then get rid of these organizations because they can be dangerous. So once they achieve the control of the country, they don't want them involved. So I think that these days they're doing the same error, Freemasons. They should stop this great reset before it's too late, because then they're going to go after them next. So they are really being stupid. Regarding instead the fact that we were in Italy and we got persecuted, well, you have to understand that Christy writes in her books also about what happened to me in 2014 when I participated to the Pitchfork Revolution, that this series of social unrest that went on in Italy. And they came and dragged me out of my house. They broke down the door. They arrested.
That was not the first time, because remember, like the very first time that they really started to persecute me was in.
That was in 2011.
That was all the way back in 2011.
And in that case, we were actually.
Was against me, myself.
Well, we were taking a trip, but it was, of course, against me also, because we were going towards Monte Carlo.
I got arrested.
And basically, wow. He was picked up by the Italian police suddenly, who declined suddenly the current visa she had for no reasons given.
And they told me I had 2 weeks.
And they actually brought her from the hotel where we were staying with their son, dragged her out of the hotel. She was under the shower, brought her in front, in the police station. And her son, of course, who was very young at the time, was shocked.
Yeah. They wouldn't let him in. He had to stay in the hot car. It was July. He was out there with Rambo, our little chihuahua. It was really horrible.
It was really terrible what they done. I got very frustrated already back then. And we should have gone to the American embassy back then, because they really deserved a kick in the ass. However, what happened in 2014 is even worse, because when they picked me up and they broke the door, then they came after a few hours with the flashlights, interrogating Christy.
Yeah, they did like that interrogation where they turn all the lights on and they put you in the middle of the room. And then they started, like, my Italian was, like, now I speak pretty good Italian, but at the time I was only learning. And so, I didn't understand half of what they were saying, and they were just, it was terrible. I didn't know where they brought him. I didn't know when I would see him again. They lied to me.
They actually tell really bad things, like leave Leo, go back to America. I mean, the police. Damn.
So, yeah.
I mean, the Italian police, bunch of crooks. That's why I hate them and despise them so much. What obviously forced us in the end to leave was when in February, March, I think, first in February, I got the impression that one of my court cases.
This is in 2019, right? When you had to flee?
Yeah. Okay. What happened was that because of one of my books, what I written in one of my books, this Masonic Grand Master and the Sovereign Grand Commander of the Ancient Sept Scottish Rite of this jurisdiction operating under this fraudulent mafiosi lodge. Basically, we're talking about the Calabrese Mafia, known as the 'Ndrangheta, one of the worst mafias in the world at the moment, and one of the most powerful. They simply went to the judge, and I could see them coming in and out of the court. And by the time I went back into the court, I just sit down, and the judge was saying to me, basically, well, what do you have under your name? And I said, sorry, but don't you want to hear my story, my version of the events? I don't know. No, they wanted to only know what I had. By saying that, they implied that they wanted to take everything from me. Then in March, just after March?
Yeah.
When they came and visited us in the evening, the Italian police arrived at 9 o'clock in the evening at my door, at my house, in the middle of nowhere. I left Roviano because of what happened, and they broke in there. So I went to live in a villa far away in the middle of nowhere with fence, everything, cameras, so nobody could come in. Mm-hmm. But we were visited at 9 o'clock. They arrived with sirens and everything to communicate that another judge was investigating me for something I wrote on Facebook.
That's before any of us were getting this kind of,
you know. So I was like, and when they broke the door that time, they said also that it was because they had been monitoring on Facebook back in 2014. So they basically, at that point, Christy was drawn she felt compelled to tell me, really, Leo, we don't have a chance here in Italy, we need to leave. And then she found Palm Springs, and then maybe she can tell you the rest of the story.
Yeah, sure.
Well, after his court case, we realized that we had to leave. And so he pretty much started selling everything that he could. And we started
the court case wasn't finished yet. I just want to say that. But I knew that I would be condemned, which was eventually I was condemned on the 6th of June when I had already left.
Yeah.
Because if I stayed in Italy, they would have taken from me my passport and they would have basically forced me to stay there. So please.
Yeah, so I don't know. I didn't know where to go. We didn't really have that much money. I saved a little bit up, but we didn't have that much. And I just had it in my head that America was really expensive. Everywhere I looked, we couldn't afford it. Even just the Airbnbs I was looking at, like my son lives in Colorado. My sister and her family live in Idaho. And those places were outrageous. And I'd given up. I didn't know where to go. And then just like one day by chance, a condo in this complex that we're living in now popped up on my phone, and it was something we could afford. And I know it sounds outrageous because we're living in Palm Springs and that's like really considered like a ritzy place to live. But I mean, it was affordable. It was like $40 a night to stay. And that's something that we could afford. And so I said, well, we're going to go to America. And so right away I booked it. I booked our tickets. And then, because before I didn't know if we were going to go to Mexico, if we were going to go to another part of Europe. Where else? Iceland. I don't know where else we picked, but we didn't know where to. Canary Islands was another place. But
I mean, I have contacts all over the world. I was
Russia.
You know, I've been working with Russia and many other countries around the world. So I have contacts and people who, at you know, in high levels of the governments who of course are still friendly with me and will have maybe. Made our life possible over there.
But live anywhere else except America because you needed to be able to stay and not just for 3 months.
No, but also there was another thing that really pushed me here, and it was that at that time, of course, the president was Donald J. Trump. Yeah, let's be honest about it. And of course, I had been very public about my support for Trump. I had, articles on the Huffington Post and on all the main Italian publications came out when I organized on the day of his When he took the oath of office on the 20th of January 2017, I organized a big event in front of the American embassy, a big event in front of the Italian parliament in one of the most luxurious palaces. And so people knew that I had been really involved and with other important Italian political figures in supporting Trump. So I thought that was the best solution possible. Also because more we were going towards our deadline, which was basically May, June, knowing that eventually the court will, the judge will sentence me, and more I was receiving threats. Yeah. And threats even not only from the judiciary that's supposed to be, you know, protecting people and being, you know, the judiciary is in the hands of these people. The Freemasons and their illegal, irregular lodges in Italy control the whole system. We call it Masso Mafia, which is a mix between mafia and masonry. They are ruling the upper echelons of the mafia, basically is Freemasonry. They have covered lodges like the Loggia Fenice, for example, a Phoenix Lodge in Calabria. And the guy I had basically exposed in my book was a member, a very powerful member of the Calabrese Freemasonry, because he was a grandmaster and he was a master of one of the main lodges of the 'Ndrangheta, under the control of the 'Ndrangheta. Because the 'Ndrangheta in the 70s, when the P2 was at its height of power, created a group called Santa with 33 mafiosi who will be initiated in Freemasonry and will function as a trade union with the mafia world. At that point, the 'Ndrangheta unified with Cosa Nostra, and it combined and created something that is now called La Cosa Unica or La Cosa Nuova, because no longer the Sicilian mafia is the most powerful, but rather the Calabrese mafia. So I was pretty influential in Sicilian Freemasonry. People knew that I was very much in it for the right reasons, but I didn't want to associate myself with any of these mafiosi. I had fought these mafiosi in their lodges face to face, you see. And that was at one point, Christy, that story when we went down to that place where the friend of Giorgio Ugo Balestrieri wanted to kill us. And we actually were about to be murdered, whacked.
Oh, no. Yeah.
We were supposed to go to this restaurant.
We were supposed to go to the restaurant. What happened, Christy?
I said, I don't want to go. This guy, I said, I'm not going to go. I had an intuition. And so I said, we need to get out of here. And so we left.
It was the right thing to do, because after not so long, they were actually... they make me know that there was behind the scenes, they were getting ready to,
do something like against us,
but something that probably would have been murder, because I don't think that they wanted to simply say hello.
Right. Oh, man, I'm so glad you guys made it out. I'm glad you're in the States, in California. I'll actually be passing through there in a couple of days. Maybe I can pass by and say hello. That would be great.
Sure,
but I'd like to hear your thoughts on what we're going through now, not only with COVID, but our future. And if you think that we have any hope of getting ourselves out of this, I don't believe that we can look towards any of our leaders, especially at this point, for any support or help or anything to get us out of the situation we're in. I think they're only going to make it worse and then dig us deeper into it. But what do you think? There's a major awakening going on amongst plenty of the population around the planet. Many people are realizing they've been lied to their entire lives, that our history is a farce,
that
everything. And so there's this going on. Do you think that, what do you think is the answer to turn everything around and maybe get out of this dystopian nightmare we're headed to?
The thing is that they have known for years that we will start to rebel. There is actually talks and speeches made within the World Economic Forum, the Club of Rome, and other of these think tanks that say that. They knew exactly that at one point the population will start to rise against this this oppressive situation, but that's when they actually are becoming even more oppressive. Because, I mean, personally, I have constructed my little reality here in very modest conditions, but dignified with Christy. We no longer reside in some big Italian villa or in some fancy castle, but we rather reside in a very, very modest setup. And we do it, though, with a lot of dignity, which is very important, I think. But we also know that this is a precarious situation, that maybe one day we will have to run and go with another bunch of people who are like-minded to live there, where we will be probably sharing with the community something different. I mean, I hope that we can, of course, stay in Southern California. I love Southern California. And I'm sure that there is a lot of places where we could be safe in Southern California, because people tend to think of California, they think LA, they think San Francisco, they think Newsom. They don't think 1 hour from here you go, there is places in the desert where they will shoot Newsom if you go there. Yeah. I mean, there is actually places where they say Newsom is not welcome when you go out in the desert.
So, I mean, think he's welcome most anywhere outside of California, but yeah.
Well, no, but even in California.
I'm sure.
But I mean, we pray for the future of the world and we have to stay positive. But the problem is that if you comply and you go in with this whole smart reality, this smart world and the vaccines and the vaccine passports and the by the way, the never ending vaccines, because after the booster, there will be a fourth dose, a fifth dose, a sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth. If you comply and you at that point are able to travel and do all the things you were doing before, and we can't do the same things we were doing before. I don't know if I will ever see my mother, for example, the rest of my family ever in my life, because I'm not going to take a plane even. I'm not even willing to do a test, to tell you the truth, because tests at times can result in damages. They are cancerogenous, and people who repeat often their test, they can get sick. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that the best solution possible is to be ready for some kind of isolated community.
I think first your circle, you know, first concentrate on your circle and the ones that you love around you, because you can't, you know, there is no community like this right now. So you have to concern yourself.
And plus, there is a lot of charlatans out there. Yeah. There will be a lot of people offering hypothetic solutions as long as you give them all your money. Well, I say to everybody, don't believe in these charlatans. Don't believe in any guru that proposes you some kind of a fairy tale, because there is no fairy tale. First of all, you need the weapons to defend the community. You need to be able to attack the drones, the robots that will come after you. You will have to have some technologic knowledge to fight the technological rise. It's like you will need engineers. You will need, like I said, the people who have a good knowledge of how to make a bomb, for example. If you have to blow up a robot or something, so, I mean, you can't only have that kind of love and light, new agey thing, because that's complete rubbish, and that's being constructed by the enemy to instradate you towards hell. And there is, at that point, you know, you might say it's all great. Well, continue saying it's all great, but in the end, it's not all great. Mm. I mean, the other day I made a conference and somebody was saying, but how can we leave the luxuries of the city? The luxuries of the city. What are the luxuries? You're living in, sorry if I say, in a shithole. Every city in the United States that at the moment is democratic control, most of them are placed literally full of human feces. And me and Christy.
Well, Rome was happening to be like that.
Well, Rome, but we know that it's under the control of the Vatican and Satan itself, so it's okay. But I mean, when it comes to LA, when we came back after 5 years and we visited LA after going to the contact in the desert, and we stayed here in Palm Springs, of course. And then we went to LA. I remember we were invited by. We went to LA. Suddenly we were like, what is this place? Mexico City, tense things, poor people thing. It was like some kind of apocalyptic scenario. We never went back there again. And we lived 2 hours from LA, and I don't go there.
I want to thank you both for coming on tonight. Before you guys head out, Christy, tell us what's the best way that people are interested, they can find your books and find out more about you.
Show the books, volume 1 and volume 2. Mm-hmm. The book Confessions of an Illuminati Princess, usually you get this book appearing, I notice, when you go on Amazon. But what you should do is to actually type in Confessions of an Illuminati, and then Confessions of an Illuminati Volume 2, if you want Volume 2.
I only have these two books. So.
But these two books are really special. And I tell you, you will...
They're exciting. They're not boring. And this is not my journey.
They are, to tell you the truth, they give a female view with a female perception of things. Things get a different filter. No, the information that I might have given in my books, but with Christy's touch, is different. And on top of that, I'm very glad to say that Christy has become a really good writer, maybe because she's been helping me out with my books in the English language for so long. She also knows very well the topics, because since the very first book in the English language, which was Pope Francis, the Last Pope, question mark, she has been collaborating, editing my books, and getting better and better herself. So when she had her debut.
I try to do better and better. There's always mistakes, and I have to go back.
But she's very much a perfectionist. So she has did already something like 3 editions of Volume 2.
No, just the cover. I never changed the inside of it. I just changed the cover a couple of times because I do my own covers.
So. No, she's fixated. She wants to do her own cover. But
the inside always stays the same.
But I can tell you one thing, that regarding the demonic, for example, what you asked before, did Christy ever have the experiences with the demonic or with the UFO? Well, those experiences Christy actually had. Because she was able to see me at one point in Estonia getting possessed by a demon after I was thrown a curse by a witch. There was a moment in which a UFO manifested in Roviano in the middle of the night on top of the thing. I mean, there is stories that are really far out. When we went to Area 51, we went to Roswell even.
And then
later
all that stuff that happened. Oh,
yeah, I mean, in Roswell, strange things happen.
Things happen all the time.
We had in Roswell a crazy experience. I mean, we were there only a few hours, and in a few hours, I got to meet Donald Schmidt, who is the
The interest that was fun.
But then when I went and sleep for 2 or 3 hours, I suddenly was shaken by.
They wanted to abduct him.
It was crazy.
It was on the anniversary of Roswell.
We went there on the 72 anniversary. And then when we left there at 3 o'clock at night, there was this long line of like a presidential car followed by a whole parade.
Out to the place where the landing was, at 3 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird. It was weird. It was definitely unusual. Wow. Then we asked, of course, my friend, who is one of the people in charge of the local Roswell Museum there, if there was some kind of event in the middle of the night. And he said nothing was reported. So, I mean, I filmed it. We filmed that event. So, I mean, we were there, And a lot of other strange things occurred during our travels around the United States on Route 66. So it's definitely worth reading Volume 2. But it's also worth reading Volume 1 because it gives you all those confirmations on all those things I've been saying for many years. So if there is still some people who think that Leo Zagami is a charlatan, Leo Zagami is a fraudster, Leo Zagami is lying, well, then you have to believe in Christy, because Christy... is a person that has never lied in her life, and she's a very pure-hearted. But she's very pure-hearted, very sincere. So I mean,
very sincere.
Yeah, and reaction to all this award made up of these things. To actually read them on the books is one thing, but to live them on you, it's a completely different ballgame. So it's a miracle we are here, and we are
thank God every day.
We thank God every day for that, and I'm glad that we were capable of delivering this interview today together, because I think it was nice. No, Christy, you want to say something else regarding today's interview?
Oh, thank you very much for having me on. I really had a nice time.
Yes, definitely. I want to thank you both for coming. That was excellent. Everybody, go pick up her books, Confessions of an Illuminati Princess, Volume 1 and 2. I'll have the Amazon links in the description so you guys can just click directly. Like I said, thank you again. That was
that before the end of the year, if God wants, of course, because is everything is always up to him, I will be bringing out Volume 7 of my Confessions.
Oh, great.
It's gonna be a pretty revealing book for a lot of people.
That's great. Well, we'll have to have you on to talk about that after that one comes out. So thank you again for coming on, and until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We will talk again tomorrow.
Take care.